Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. So glad you tuned in today. Happy Friday to you. Hope your week has gone great. Well, I'm so excited for today's show. I'll be talking with my friend, fellow radio host, best-selling author Chris Fabry. He's got a brand new novel out titled Every Waking Moment. We'll explore themes of calling, gifts, faith, the importance of really seeing the value in each and every soul. And he's always a great, great guest. So I don't want to waste another moment. Let me tell you about my guest, and we'll get this conversation started. Chris Fabry is an accomplished writer and radio talk show host. He hosts a daily program, Chris Fabry Live, on Moody Radio, and was honored in 2008 with Talk Personality of the Year by the National Religious Broadcasters. He's also heard on Love Worth Finding and on Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, which he co-hosts with his wife, Andrea. His adult novels include Dogwood, Junebug, Almost Heaven, Not in the Heart, and Borders of the Heart, and he's won 2 Christie Awards and even an ECPA Christian Book Award. He's published, listen to this, more than 65 other books, including nonfiction and novels for children and young adults. He and his wife, Andrea, live in Arizona and are the parents of, listen to this, 9 children. You can learn more about Chris on the web at chrisfabry.com. We've got a few copies of Chris's novel to give away, so answer the question on my Facebook page, and maybe you'll be one of those winners. Facebook.com/deeperlifeinchrist. Welcome, Chris.
That introduction is just exhausting, isn't it?
It is. I'm telling you, I said to you before the show, you're a loaves and fishes guy. Someday I'm going to just pick your brain, but I love how God has used you. So it's an honor to have you with us today.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me here. It's great to talk with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get into the content of your new novel, you've been on the show a few times before. You know this. We'd like to start out talking scripture. I'm wondering if there's a verse the Lord's been speaking to you about these days, or if there's a life verse you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, the last time I was on, we talked about Colossians 3:23-24, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. And I still cling to that. But I had a conversation with a fellow in the Northeast radio host the other day. And he said, you know, Chris, I'm waiting for somebody to tell me that their life verse is take up your cross and follow me. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's all of these verses that tell us about a future and a hope. And those are great. But he said, I think my life verse now is going to be Matthew 13:1. And I quickly, you know, turned to it as he was talking to me. And he said, let me read it to you. On that day, Jesus went out of the house and was sitting by the sea. That's the verse.
I love it.
Don't you know? And I think what he's saying there is, look, everything in your life, it's not just, the, you know, tomorrow and what the great plans there. Everything in your life is ordered by God. This is a sacred moment, this conversation that we're having. The conversation that you have with your wife or your kids or, you know, your coworker that you don't necessarily like that much. You're grooming your dog. You can do that, you know, fitting that back into the rubric of Colossians 3. You can do that to the glory of God, whatever you do. And I believe that Jesus, when he went out of the house and was sitting by the sea, was doing exactly what God wanted him to do. And he was probably meeting with God there, because after that, it talks about all the large crowds, you know. He just did not have these moments to be alone. It was just he was constantly surrounded by people who were wanting him to do what they wanted him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to, as much as possible, seize every waking moment, you know, seize this moment to glorify God, not just so that I can see, you know, wild answers to prayers or miraculous things that will happen, but just so that he could still my heart and that I could listen to the waves that are crashing around me. And we've got a lot of those, you know, these days. A lot of people are struggling in some way. And I just, this morning, before we talked, I had a call from another person who was going to interview me. And he said, Chris, I'm really sorry that I can't talk with you today because the company let me go last Friday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And he called me to tell me, you know, I got to cancel the interview. I don't work at the radio station anymore. And that just, I said, look, you're on my prayer list. I'm going to pray for you. Don't you think, if the second thing about that, thank you for letting me know, you know, because I would have been wondering the rest of the day. I wonder if I'd done something wrong. But that's where a lot of people are,
yeah.
With the waves crashing around. And can we get still and quiet, and can we allow even a drive, let's say, driving to work, to be done for the glory of God, because this is a sacred moment.
Indeed. You know, just this morning I was reading in a devotional about the importance of solitude, and we're in this, you know, results-oriented society. It just is contrary to our mindset to be still and know that He is God. But that is where those still waters start to run deep. And then I feel like we've got something to draw from for the rest of the day. But I don't know. I think those still places with God it's just like one of the most underrated disciplines for us today.
Well, and it's hard with all of those media that's going on and the social media and everything that we're plugged into. It's hard to get that quiet moment. And you can just curse the social media and curse the gadgetry. And I don't do that. I don't think technology is the problem. Technology is just, it shows the symptom of what's going on in our hearts. And, you know, we would do this with flipping around on the radio if we didn't have Facebook. You know, we would find some way to have our heart not be still. So it's always been this way. It just, you know, is in our face a lot more with the technology. So, you know, just to remember that, to rest, to be still, to sit by the sea and realize that God is right here, He's with you, that Jesus wants that relationship, that where you turn some of these things off and key into Him.
Indeed. You know, I was thinking as you're talking, it really isn't that we need more time. It's just that how we use the time that we have, you know?
Well, that's what a lot of people ask. You know, you say you've written all these books, and many of those were children's books, children's novels, not to put them down, but they...
But the,
you know,
word count was probably a little less.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they took, you know, didn't take quite as long as some of the adult stuff that I've written. But they'll say, so how do you do that? And I'll say, well, you will get done what you prioritize. If you want to do something, you will find time to do it if you want to do it badly enough. Because a lot of people will say, oh, I've got this great story and I really want it, or so-and-so's life story, I've got to write that, but I just need to find the time, as if all you needed was the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes more than just time, but if you don't sit down and do it, you know, if you say, well, I really want a great marriage, well, what are you doing in order to have that happen? What kind of things are you willing to sacrifice to have a great marriage? And for me, with the writing, a lot of it's just been turned off the TV. We don't have cable anymore. We don't have satellite. We have over the air, so we have just a few channels, and most of those here in Arizona don't speak my same language, so I don't I don't have to worry about that. I have turned off the TV. I've gotten up earlier, you know, to do what I do, so that the other things in the day that I have to do, I can still do those. But I put a priority on this. So whatever you say you really want to do, you will find the time to do it.
That's so good. Well, I'm going to one other question I want to ask you before we get into the novel, because I think this actually does tie into the novel. But just as I told you before the show, I just have so appreciated the encouragement you've given me over the years. But I've also really admired you from afar, because I don't know very many other people who do what you do, what I do, as far as write books, do some speaking, and then get on the other side of the mic as a radio host. And you've really served as an amazing model for me, Chris. I don't know about you, but when I've been at some of these writers' conferences and I've had agents and editors walk up a young person to me and say, tell her how to build a speaking platform, 9 out of 10 times they're so disappointed by what I have to say, because what I say is, be much with God and do the next thing He tells you to, and build His kingdom and seek Him, and He'll put a platform under you. Not to say there aren't some practical, technical things, but almost everybody wants to hear from me, well, I hooked up with this person, I sat with the right person, I did this and that, and I can't do it that way, because I don't want to use people. I want to love people, and I want to just trust Him that He'll tell me the next thing to do. But 9 out of 10 roll their eyes and go, no, just give me the logistics. But then they have that one person whose eyes well up with tears, and they're like, that's what He's telling me, too. Now, maybe that's not how He works with everybody, Chris, but it's how He's done it with me. But there's so often, I think, people want a quick shortcut and give me the list, But there's an internal process that is about this too, isn't there?
Absolutely. I totally resonate with that because we, you know, well, I will have musical artists on and we'll talk about their music and, you know, what God's doing in their life. And invariably, one of the first calls that comes in is, I have a song or I have a ministry and I really want to get big like you. That's not how they frame it, but that's the desire. Success is this big, huge thing where I sing in front of a lot of people. Well, that's not, I mean, look at Jesus' life. You know, he was pressed by the crowds, but look at the geography that he lived and breathed and moved in. It was very small, but God, he did exactly what God wanted him to do. Look at, you know, John the Baptist, or look at the ministry of Paul. Now, he had a, you know, wide reach. He went all the way around the world, but his biggest impact probably was when he was imprisoned, sitting in that cell writing these letters to the Romans and everybody else that we have today. So, you know, you can chase the formula. You can also chase the healing. And that kind of ties in with the subject of the story that I've written too, that we're very much keyed into success means that I'm going to be healed of everything that is, you know, is hurting me right now. That I'm going to get on some plateau where I can look back at that and give praise to God because now I'm past it. And God is not in the business of getting us past pain. He's in the business of walking through the pain with us. And even as I say that, it sticks in my craw because I want to be past it just like everybody else does, you know. Yeah. I don't want to have financial problems. I don't want to have health problems. I don't want to have, you know, relational problems. But these are endemic, we are a very needy people, and we don't like to be, especially as Americans. We want everything to be, you know, sewed up and give me the prayer to pray, and I'll pray it every day, and then God will bless me. It doesn't work that way. He doesn't care as much about us being comfortable as he cares about conforming us to the image of his son, and that's what he wants to do. That's the work that he's going to complete. So when I key into that, when I understand that, then it makes some of the pain in my life more understandable, that there is a purpose in the midst of this, and rather than trying to get past it, oh God, help me to figure out what you're doing, what you want me to become in the midst of this, rather than having to get on the other side of it.
That's so good. And you're thinking about some of these greats in Scripture that we reference all the time, Ruth and Joseph, and you're talking Paul and Peter, how many times they were in obscurity, or at least felt that way, and yet now we get this glance at their lives and what God has done. And yet, as you say, we want the big platform. We want the big, you know, even people who are willing to sacrifice their integrity for 10 minutes of fame. I mean, these reality shows, it just shows you how our culture has turned things upside down. So thinking small in a way of taking up your cross, of being still with God, of looking for that deeper story even in another person is so contrary to our, you know, sensibility in this day. And in case you just tuned in, I'm talking to best-selling author Chris Faber. He's a radio host as well. He's got a brand new novel out called Every Waking Moment. So let's segue into this story, because this story does beg you to lean in a little bit and look deeper at a person's story and their value. So why don't you set up the storyline for us?
Well, I love the picture on the cover. It's just the kind of the profile looking from the back of this at this young girl, and you don't know what she's going through. You just see this longing in her heart, and it's true. Her name is Treha, T-R-E-H-A. Now write that down in your mind, T-R-E-H-A. That name is an anagram for another word. You can make another word out of all of those letters, T-R-E-H-A, and you pronounce it Treha. And Treha works at Desert Gardens Retirement Home. She's basically a janitor, but and she's disconnected. And she has this longing in her heart to know her past, but she doesn't. She doesn't know her story. She doesn't know where she came from. She just knows all of the foster families that she's been through in the system. And there are people at the retirement home who are asking the same question that Treha asks. In fact, all of the characters in the novel ask this same question, and that is, if this is as good as it gets, am I okay with that? if this is as good as my life gets, if this is the pinnacle, then am I okay with that, with what God is doing in my heart? Now, Treya doesn't have that relationship with God that that she needs to have, let me say it that way, because she's marginalized. She's on the outside. She's never had anybody kind of speak into her life this way. And so are the people who are kind of warehoused in that retirement home. They're just kind of pushed off to the side. But so is the young man who's doing the documentary at the retirement home, hoping to make it big with his documentary. And so is the Miriam who is about to retire. She is being kind of shoved out from being the head of the retirement home. And she's got a heart for these people. It's just so golden. But the people who are on the board have decided there's somebody else who needs to take over, who, you know, is going to do a little bit better job in some area fiscally or whatever. So everybody in the story is asking this question, and I think everybody listening is at some level asking that. If this is as good as it gets, if this is as far as God takes me in my relationship with my husband, for example, or if my children continue down the path that they're going, and I know that it's not going to be a good end. If this is as good as it gets, can I still have faith and trust in God that He's going to be working in me and through me, and that am I okay with that? And we had to ask Susie this question because of our health concerns with, you know, what we've been through and all of the things that 5 years ago that happened to us, where we had to ask, oh, you know, what does health look like? What does our life look like again? And how are we going to run toward that health and you know, achieve it? And here we are 5 years down the road, and we are better. You know, we've proceeded down that road health-wise. But at the same time, we're not where we were back then, you know, 5 years ago. We're not where we were financially. We're not where we were health-wise. If this is as good as it gets, if God wants to use me here in the desert rather than up on the mountaintop where we were, am I okay with that?
Wow, such a powerful question, Chris. And for those who don't know your story, if you don't mind, you've got to tell it, because this is really unbelievable. Tell us where you were 5 years ago before the bottom fell out for you guys.
Well, we had moved to this house in Colorado and had lived there 8 years, and it was like our dream. We were going to die in this house. It was triple the size of what we had had in Illinois, and everything was going fine. It was a great neighborhood. The kids were, you know, doing well, except health-wise. And it was almost like when we moved into the house, their health started dipping. Well, 7 years into when we moved there, we discovered mold behind one of the walls. And when it was remediated, when they tried to clean it up, it wasn't done properly. And it was about 6 weeks after that that one of my sons was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. It was a few weeks after that that another of my sons started having constant vertigo and went through a series of surgeries. We found more mold. Both of these were bad shower installs, but it was growing behind the walls. We couldn't see it. I can show you pictures from this. It was just an incredible-looking house on the outside, but on the inside it was killing us. And we had a child who had started getting seizure disorders and others with eye problems, diplopia. Our dogs were sick. We had a bird that chewed its leg off. I mean, it was a house of horrors, but we couldn't, every specialist that we went to said, you know, we'd ask, you know, our son has this. Well, no, that doesn't have anything to do with it. Our daughter had, no, that doesn't have anything to do with it. And it took us another year to connect all the dots that it's the environment that we're living in that is killing us. And so we got counsel from a toxicologist and from a medical doctor who said, look, it's clear from the levels, because we had the house tested, it's clear from the levels of this, you guys got to treat this like a fire. So we left the house with our clothes on our backs and changed out of those at Walmart and Kohl's. I don't know if I can mention those.
Yeah, sure.
but it was the most surreal thing to watch your children. Two of my sons were being, you know, they went to somebody else's house during this time. And I saw them at the store, and these friends were buying my kids' clothes for them to change into. It, it was such a humbling experience. Mm-hmm. And the financial hit that we took, the insurance didn't cover it for the home. The health insurance wouldn't cover our out of network, you know, the stuff that we needed. So it was like this tsunami that kind of washed over us in as far as changing our lives. And we moved to Arizona because there was a medical doctor here that could treat us. And we spent the last 5 years trying to dig out of that hole, trying to figure out, okay, what does life look like? And in the midst of that, I have found that the reparative therapy of writing stories, you know, of talking on the radio to people who have problems just like I do, and most of them have bigger problems than I do. But we all struggle. You know, we've all got problems, so why compare those? Somebody who's listening will say, well, wow, I hope I'll never have to go through that. And others would trade it, you know.
Yeah.
Others would trade, I'd like that because I had a family member die, or I had a miscarriage, or, you know, you still have your kids. So I don't compare all these things. I just simply say, it's been hard. It's been really, really hard. But I wouldn't, now looking back on it, I would not trade that for where God has us today. And I wouldn't want to go through it again, and I wouldn't want anybody else to. And I think that we're helping people who are going through the same types of things so that they won't have to go through that, you know, who can recognize it earlier than we did. But at the same time, I know that God is doing a work in us. And if this is as good as it gets, I can say to you today, if this is as good as our health gets, and it's, I'm okay with that, because I have seen the power of God in the middle of the struggle and the loss and the pain.
Wow. Okay, I have three questions for you. One, your wife also battled, didn't she, because of this mold?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what were her health challenges, if you don't mind me asking?
She had, you know, the way that it showed up to her, she's always been this multitasker who could do everything. And she was in, a store, and a friend of hers saw her and said, hey, Andrea, how are you? And she's fine, doing great. Aren't you supposed to be at the elementary school at the mom's tea? And she's, oh, I totally forgot. And she got there, and it was the Mother's Day tea, and our youngest son Brandon was the only child in the classroom whose mother was not there, and she was late, and she had missed it. And it was those types of things, cognitively, memory issues. She wasn't holding stuff in her brain, and that's what this type of mold wants, Stachybotrys. It attacks the prefrontal cortex. It attacks the brain. It attacks the heart. And it's also carcinogenic, you know, a lot of the mold that we have lived under the specter of who's, you know, are we going to go crazy? Are we going to have a heart attack? Are we going to, you know, are we just going to keel over and die? We don't know. And it's also a lung thing, and it can get in your lungs and do all that.
Man.
So we just decided, and she did, we're going to do everything that we can in order to, reverse this. But we're not going to cling to the healing as our God. But, Adrian Rogers always said, believe in miracles, but trust in Jesus.
Yeah, I love that.
But we've been doing that for the last 5 years, you know, not perfectly, but, and her memory, you know, I've seen her, now she's doing blogs, now she's doing HTML on her own website. I mean, it's just incredible the progress that she has made, but we don't have to have, you know, she does have meltdowns, and she was very, very tired for a long time, too, and now her energy has returned to her. And so, you know, I've seen her progress, but we're not where we were, you know, 8 years ago or, you know, 13 years ago before we moved into that house.
And then how about the house? Did they burn it? It's not, they don't have somebody living there, do they?
Well, I could go on for days talking about this. We sold it for what we owed on it to a group of investors who buy these kinds of things and then who tear it up and fix it up and sell it. And we sold it for what I owed on it, or what we owed on it, the day before it was to go into foreclosure. I mean, the timing of this was just unbelievable. And as I understand it, there is a family living in there now and doing well.
Wow.
And, you know, I pray for them every now and then. And I look back, you know, I've seen just in the last couple of days, I saw she posted on her Facebook a picture of our bedroom where I had gotten home from a trip that night. And I put my suit on the back of the leather chair, and that's where it stayed. We never moved it from there.
Wow.
And when we sold the house, the people who bought it came in and put everything in a dumpster. They tore, you know, through all of the beds, all of the computers. I don't know what they did with the computers. Everything, you know, all of my books, Susie, all of my books, my signed copies of these, you know, these writing books that I had that I loved. And, you know, I can understand when Paul said, I count all but loss.
Wow.
You know, I understand a little bit of what he was talking about there. And I'll stop right there.
Okay.
That's where we are.
And my third question, which we'll handle on the other side of the break, is what you did gain in God, what you did draw from this time. What are the spoils from that war? I'd love to know. Talking to Chris Fabry. We'll be right back. We're talking about his new novel as well, Every Waking Moment. We'll be right back. Love that song, Stephen Curtis Chapman. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my friend Chris Fabry, best-selling novelist, radio host, father of count 'em, 9 children, and about a million books. So, Chris, before the break, you were talking about how the bottom fell out of your lives a number of years ago, being in a house that had mold in it and the health impact of your family, leaving basically not even with a shirt on your back because you had to get rid of that too. You left behind your books, signed copies of really treasured books. And so you moved to Arizona and you have to start over and you guys are in that rebuilding process. And so the question I asked you before the break is because you said, I wouldn't trade it. I don't want to go through it again, but I wouldn't trade it. Why wouldn't you trade it? What are you carrying of God and in your heart that you gained out of this painful trial?
I think we came to the end of ourselves, and I came to the end of myself. You know, there's a sense of humility that you gain when you go through something like that you don't have all the answers. See, we had done everything right, you know, quote unquote, in the way that the world would say, and an investment in a home and, you know, your savings and trying to do things smartly economically, that came to an end very quickly. And it didn't take me long to understand when God's all you have, God's all you need. You know, it's a cliche, but it's true. I can take you to the stretch of road that I was driving in a U-Haul from between Colorado Springs and Tucson. It was in New Mexico on the other side of Albuquerque, and I think it was Family Life Radio that I was listening to, or maybe it was in Elephant Butte now that I think about it. And this song came on the radio at about 2 a.m. and I was alone and I was driving, you know, the little that we did have after we had gotten out of that house. We had a bunch of people give us some furniture and we had bought some mattresses. And I remember when this song came on the radio, a series of songs, it was just like God is right there in the seat next to me. And what I had next to me was all my radio equipment.
Wow.
Because I didn't want to put it in the back because I was afraid that, you know, get mashed back there. But I had the radio equipment there next to me. And I just felt this presence that God, you know, and I didn't hear him or see him, but through this connection that, you know, the music was making, it was like, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. You're going to not only survive through this, you're going to thrive through this. And I'm going to work in you and through you in ways that you don't want me to, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, I'm going to keep working on you because you're not all the way there yet. And that's not an easy thing to hear from God. And here's the irony of that. We got into this, brought all of these mattresses. Basically, all we had were mattresses and a little bit of furniture. We moved them into a house that had just had the inside sprayed for termites, and you're not supposed to do that. And we spent the first night inside and everybody got sick. We didn't realize we were chemically sensitive because of all of the
mold had done.
So we lost, nosebleeds, headaches, all this stuff. It was February, we were sleeping outside. And we lost all of those, it's just so funny. We lost all those mattresses that I paid all this money to drive a U-Haul down.
Oh, my goodness.
It was like, and so at that point you start to get paranoid and you start to think everything is going to be, everything's going to kill us, and you don't even want to run water because you're afraid it's going to, and you can live your life under the specter of what's next? What's going to happen next to us? There's going to be some cataclysm that's going to, even in the midst of that, we saw the mercy of God and the grace of God. And I can take you, one more story. This is so fun. Because I can tell it with a smile now. At the time, it wasn't. I could take you back to the bedroom in a little three-bedroom house that we rented for about 6 months, where there were seven of us in one room, sleeping on air mattresses and on, in sleeping bags, and my wife and I on one air mattress. I could reach out and touch two of my kids, sleeping right next to me. And I wouldn't trade that memory of having the window open and the cool air coming in on a spring morning in Arizona, and waking up and looking out at the dregs of our life. Here we've come from this huge place, and here we are like this, and God is still with us. And I think it's changing the way that we live. It's changing the way that we reorient our lives. The stuff that we surround ourselves with, we try to travel a lot lighter now than we did. The hold on things when things break or break down or burn up or whatever is not as great on us, because we've seen what the loss can do, and it really didn't mean that much anyway.
Reminds me of this paraphrase of the passage where right now things are being shaken so that which cannot be shaken can be clearly seen. If we're not in a day like that, it's now. You think about that. It's like you saw what can't be shaken. And as hard as it is that so many godly people are suffering and struggling, there's something that's precious that's coming out of that, because it's blowing to smithereens the prosperity mindset that, you get good when you do good, and it's a formula, and you can just really say it this way, pray it this way, and get what you want. And I think it was Ed Young that we had on the show, and we were just exploring the whole idea that true faith isn't, you don't assess strong faith by how blessed a person's life is. You assess their faith of how they're standing in each of these different seasons, because godly people suffer,
Well, and I've got a friend in Dallas who his wife contracted MS, and he works at Dallas Theological Seminary. He was at Moody Bible Institute when my wife and I first got there, and we spent a night on their floor, sleeping on their floor. There's a theme here of us sleeping on the floor. I don't know what it is. But he has been to Israel with his wife, Lisa. He has, in a wheelchair, pushed her up some of those rocky mountains so that she could experience this with him at least one more time. And over the weekend, I got a Facebook post from him that Adult Protective Services came to their door over the weekend and gave them a notice that, they have had a report. If there is anybody on the face of the planet who has given and loved well, it is my friend Greg. And here he gets, this is the person who does not need another slap in the face. I mean, he's just, eking by an existence, trying to, do everything that he can to make his wife's life better, more comfortable, and, what she's going through, and he gets something like this. He didn't deserve that, no. But what I interpret from that is there's something that God is doing. God is in the midst of this. He is doing something even in that, and even in his reaction to, this being served this notice, God is going to get the glory from that. And I wish he didn't have to go through it, but I'm anticipating not, the big wild blessing of God for direct healing of her MS, but for the glory to go to God as he handles that.
Amen. Well, all that to say that our hard times will not have the last say. And that's the promise. So we're looking at this novel, Every Waking Moment. And so the theme that runs through, because I was trying to make the connection, I'm like, how did he come up with this story? And how is it tied to your story? And I know that just the underlying question is, if this is as good as it gets, will I be okay? Will I find joy in the Lord? And but you deal with the issue of Alzheimer's and how Treya, this precious little soul who has this rocky past of, you know, really no roots family-wise, is able to speak into the lives of these Alzheimer patients. Say a little bit about that dynamic and where that came from for you.
There's a sense that some of my daughters, I have five daughters, four boys, my daughters have struggled with the after effects of all of this in a greater way, I think, or it's been more pronounced in them, I think, moving forward. So I use Treya to show someone who is a little bit, you know, on the margins of society, who doesn't make a connection, and maybe, you know, my daughters used to, and now they're struggling. Okay, so I use this, and I made Treya even worse. You know, I put her into a situation where you just don't have a whole lot of hope for her, except this gift that she has to go to a patient who has dementia or Alzheimer's and call them back. And Susie, I've seen this on a video that was sent to me through one of the channels of an older lady who goes to a woman who is kind of locked away. She has this repetitive movement. She's banging on her chair, and the woman starts to stroke her cheek. And she says, this is where a mother would stroke the cheek of a child. And she just starts talking to her. And she says, is there room in there for me and with you and Jesus? Can I come in for a little bit? And she starts. And the woman who's locked away has her eyes closed very tightly and her mouth closed very tightly. And the lady starts to sing to her, Jesus loves me. And one other, like, little Bible song from her childhood. And the transformation is just unbelievable. And when I wrote about Treya, I did not know anybody could make this happen. You know, I thought this was just a wild thing. But this lady, at the end of the video, she's finishing he's got the whole world, and she's finishing in his hands. The lady who was locked away is repeating this. And so I know that something like that can happen.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten emails from people, too, when I talked about this on my program. They said, you know, there was a moment of clarity that when my dad sat up or my mom sat up in the hospital bed and recognized me, and what a gift, you know, called out my name one more time before they had passed away. So that's what Treya can do. But even that gift is pushed aside. She gets fired from the retirement facility by this new person that comes in. So Treya is adrift again, just like a lot of people in our society. She's not tethered at all, even though she's got this great gift.
I've got to tell you, I've experienced exactly that. My mother-in-law had Alzheimer's, and I want to talk about Treya and just even her storyline, but I just have to say to you, Chris, went to see her about a year ago, a little over a year ago, and she was locked away, basically. She just was sitting up, and her head was kind of tilted. She'd drift in and out of sleep, but she'd just have a blank stare. And I sat down, and I held her hand, and I said, I'm your daughter-in-law. And she looked at me, and I said, you were an amazing mom. And she said, I was, wasn't. I mean, she went from mumbling words that were not words. She sat up and goes, I was, wasn't I? I go, and an even better grandma. She goes, I was. And I said, and you taught my boys about Jesus. And then she took it from there. She said, they're little feetsy jammies. I'd have them on my lap, didn't I? And I would sit by the window. And she literally, they would have their feetsy jammies, and they would sit on her lap, and she would tell them, I sit by the eastern window because I'm waiting for Jesus to come back. And so she would talk with utter clarity, and she would add to the memory with utter clarity. And then she'd go back away again, and we would wait and hold her hand, and then we'd talk again about the kind of mom she was, and she would sit up. And I'm not kidding you. She'd come from somewhere so far away and speak with such clarity. And I told Kev when we drove away, I'm like, the Holy Spirit is in her. She is a believer you know, in her absolute core. And that is what connects with her in the deepest way, is how she imparted that to her kids and grandkids. I mean, I sobbed the whole way home. I couldn't even believe to see her from drooling and mumbling to talking with absolute clarity. Amazing.
And it shows the dignity of her. You know, she was no different because she couldn't respond, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of people just don't feel that. They feel like they're not seen and they're not heard, and it's almost like they are locked away, you know, I keep using the word marginalized, but that's and lonely and abandoned, and you can put all of that in there. I guess the thing that the place where I want to go is, you know, the what the fella told me this morning when he couldn't interview me because he didn't have a job anymore, he didn't have a show anymore. He said, you know what, my identity is in Christ. My identity is not with that job that I have. And if we live that way and then look at other people that way, their identity, they are creations of God. And if they're unbelieving, you know, they don't believe like we do, they still are creations of God with the potential to respond to his call of love and forgiveness and mercy in their lives. So wherever they are on that spectrum, we can love them well.
That is so good. And, you know, Chris, it sort of goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning about the difference between posturing and, you know, almost manipulating your situation and sitting by the right people to get your deal done.
Yeah.
And pausing long enough to see that there's a deeper story. Because, you know, I mean, a lesser person would maybe discard this friend who lost his job. Do you know what I'm saying? Because you're not of use to me anymore because I need a radio interview versus, you know, really being a Christ follower where you say, I care about your whole story. In fact, on the back of your book, you say, our stories intertwine in ways we can't know when we first hear them. And maybe the point of all this is that we do well to listen. And I want you just to say more about that because there's a lot more going on in this novel, and it is a call for us to see the deeper value in a person's story, not for what they can do for us, but because God made them.
Yeah, and where that comes from, there is a character in the novel who believes in the quote-unquote cosmic story. Now, this is not a Christian view. It's kind of this new age, you know, we're all rivers and we're all tributaries and we're all streams. And he has it partly right, that we're all interconnected, you know, we're all dependent on each other in a certain sense, that we need each other. But we are kind of floating through this world thinking we're very independent, you know, and which is kind of mirrors our story. But when you catch what God is doing, when you see the ways, the tapestry that he is weaving, and I think there's one character in this novel that talks about the jigsaw puzzle, you know, it's like you get all of the edge pieces around and then you can take care of the rest. Mm. You need somebody else to do that. Well, God is continually doing that with our lives, with the puzzles, and he's shaking our puzzle pieces up, you know, and he's making us try to look for the one that'll fit in the right place. And the problem is we just try to force fit so many other things other than him. And so when you get back to that connection that you have with God and you see that these encounters that you have with people on the street or on, you know, a wrong phone number, I don't care what it is, these are not happenstance, these are not chance, these are not mistakes, these are opportunities. And I love what, I think I've said this before on your program, but I keep coming back to it. There was a columnist in Chicago, I interviewed him. He wrote this story about being at an airport in Newark, New Jersey. And the person up in front was taking too long, and everybody was real frustrated. And it was a Down syndrome man, probably in his 20s, I believe. And he was trying to, for maybe the first time, get his ticket or get his seat on the airplane. This was years ago. And the columnist looked over and saw two older people with tears in their eyes, standing by this column, watching what was going on. And he made the connection. It was like, mom and dad, son. First time he's doing this. He's doing it on his own. It's not mom and dad. He's doing it himself. Oh, he got it. And he said, I looked at that, and I saw the frustration of the other people, and it was just like it made him weep because they didn't see it. And I asked him, why did, you know, why you? There were a lot of people in line that day. Why you? And he said, well, the most profound thing spiritually I've ever heard, and he wasn't a Christian, he said, I guess you got to look. In order to see, you've got to look, which takes me always back to Bartimaeus, you know, and Jesus asking him, what do you want me to do for you? And Bartimaeus saying, oh, Lord, I want to see. If that would be our prayer every day, oh, Lord, would you help me to see the worth of this individual in front of me, or this problem that I am going through, that you're doing something in my life bigger than what I want to do with my life. Would you help me to open my eyes and to look at that, and to not just look, but to see? And that takes something divine, you know, something from God in order to happen.
Mm, wow, I just love that. It does seem like there's this underlying theme in our conversation today, and again in the story, where when we get into the self-ambition, the self-realization that I'm going to make a name for myself, however that looks, I'm going to do my deal, I'm going to do what I think success looks like, we will not only miss people, we'll step on people. But if we step back and go, you know, as I delight in God, he will establish me. He knows my address. He knows where I live. I'm going to do everything I do with excellence, of course. I think that's so important to steward whatever he's given you to do. But to back way up and consider others as valuable and important. And so you're moving at a pace where you can actually see people. Man, I think that's when we'd actually really start to see the sacredness in the moment, don't you?
I do, and it patterns what Jesus did, who did not grasp equality with God, you know, as something to hang on to. But he humbled himself, he became obedient, he became a man. And I, you know, a lot of times I've thought of that as just, you know, Jesus kind of holding his nose and coming down, you know, becoming a baby, and I'll, you know, okay, I'll go through this because I know I have to. But no, he embraced life. And, you know, we started out with Matthew 13:1. He went out to sit by the sea, preparing himself for what was going to happen the rest of the day, for the lepers who were going to come, for the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the people who hated him, who didn't want his message, and the people who were just kind of passing by and indifferent. He was preparing himself for that and embracing not only the disciples and the people who were, you know, around him, but embracing the nails, you know, embracing the cross, embracing the pain for you and me, so that we could then mirror that in humility and in condescending, you know, to other people who, like you say, may not be able to advance our career or advance our desires, but who are worthwhile to God and are worthy of our respect and our love and our care.
Mm. One just phrase, I'm not a fan of cliches either. That's why I always think it's funny that God speaks to me in cliches sometimes. But one he gave me years ago that I've just held on to is love people and hope in God. Because when you put your hope in people, they'll disappoint, but they make a lousy source anyway. And so when I look to God, the author and the finisher, and I just love people for the sake of loving people, to me it simplifies things significantly, because then it keeps my heart pure, you know?
Yeah, That's a great place. And you know that, you know, if people will fail you, you're going to fail people too.
Exactly.
And that's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard thing to come up against, you know, your own failures, your own selfishness. But I think that's what God is pointing us back to every time, and not to rub our nose in it, not to have us wallow in it, but to say, okay, I see it, Lord, forgive me, help me to stand up now and walk.
Mm. You know, as a radio host, national radio host, and you're on two other programs, you're definitely got a pretty big platform in the public eye and all of that. You know, something I notice, whether it's someone with a big platform or somebody behind the scenes, that the fear of man can have a real stranglehold and really impact us in the way that we live life, where we end up reacting to others' opinions versus responding to God. You know, I know just for some of the emails that I get at times, I get lots of wonderful, gracious, beautiful emails, and I appreciate you when you email me, thank you, friend. But once in a while, you get a hyper-religious conk you on the head, you didn't say it exactly the way I think you should have said it kind of email. And you've been at this a long time. How do you process that to the point where you can live in that freedom of God's acceptance? You want to be considerate of people without letting them derail you completely.
That is so hard because it's so close to my heart. You know,
yeah.
I'm doing this because I want to help people. I want to point people to God. So when people say, you know, I never listen to you again, it's really hard. And usually what I do is I send the first draft of the email as a really nasty note back, and then I wait and I delete that. And I think, here, for some reason, this person has written me out of their pain and out of their struggle. It is probably somebody who has something else going on in their life, and they have keyed in on whatever this thing is. You know, sometimes it's justified. You know, sometimes they're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't always say it right, right?
Yeah. And I got to go there, and I say, okay, is this right or not? And then I had to look at them as a person and say, you know what, I am going to, instead of, you know, repaying a vilifying statement with another, I'm going to respond kindly to this person, because there may not be anybody else in their life who's doing that. They may not have that in their life. So that's what I try to see everybody who writes as a wounded person, whether they say you did a great job or you did a terrible job. Everybody's wounded in some way, and there's some reason why they've reached out.
Boy, that's such a good word. One final question before I ask you to pray. What are you hoping readers will take away from your new novel, Every Waking Moment?
I hope they hear there's hope. And I hope they hear that if wherever they are right now is not where they want to be, that where they are is the best place they can be, because this is where God will work in their lives. Mm. And he may not do a miracle. He may not provide total healing, but he is there, and he will take you through whatever it is that you're going through.
Wow. Well, this has been a delightful time. Chris, it always goes so fast when you come on the show. Appreciate that so much. And wondering, as we close in prayer, if you pray for that person who's maybe left in the ashes of their pain, and your question maybe even jarred them, if this is as good as it gets,
yes.
Can I find joy in this place? Would you pray for that person?
Father, would you give us eyes to see, ears to hear, a heart open to you, a heart ready to receive your forgiveness and your love? Would you give that person who's struggling with this sense of whatever it is, the relationship or the financial struggle or the health problem, they want to progress, or a family member who's gone away, would you give them hope that is based in you and not in their own ability? We've come to the end of ourselves in a lot of ways here, and you brought us there. And that's a very good place. It's a hard place, but it's a good place. Would you open our eyes to see what you're doing right here so that we might glorify you, so that we might show Jesus to those around us? I pray in the name of Christ.
Amen. Chris Fabry, thank you so much for your time. We so appreciate it.
God bless you, Susie. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, always good to be with you. Title of his new novel, again, is Every Waking Moment. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. You can find this whole interview on our website at myfaithradio.com, along with podcasts from Faith Radio Mornings, Connecting Faith, and Everyday Relationships. Well, tune in tomorrow for the weekend edition of Live the Promise. You'll hear my discussion with Counselor Ed Welch about what it means to break free from shame and codependency. This was a great conversation, and if you've wrestled with trying to please other people, you won't want to miss this show. Well, finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and he's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.